Hi, I'm thinking of getting another tattoo to go with my raging dragon one.
Sure. What are you looking for?
Well, maybe something like a...
Bunnies! He wants a row of bunny rabbits with twitchy noses.
Your vote is your voice, so don't let others decide for you.
All holding giant flowers.
Who's that?
Ella. She works in the bank next door.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
Too cute. And write Sarah on it.
Cute? I'm a martial arts champion. And my boyfriend's name is Jack.
This week on Crime World...
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Indo Daily. Now, a special episode from our sister podcast, The Bell Tell.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
It's one of those stories that if you made it up, it would seem far-fetched. An eccentric but brilliant engineer and inventor comes up with a futuristic sports car and decides to make it in Dunmurry, in the middle of the Troubles. That car was named after its maker, John DeLorean.
Well, here it is, unquestionably the most talked about car here at Motor Fair, the DeLorean.
I'm an engineer and I like a product, I like technical things. Very proud of our car, which essentially I think is a major engineering contribution to the state of the art of automobiles.
At the time, the car was not a huge success, but Hollywood brought it to the big screen and iconic status.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
In this episode of The Bell Tell, I find out about the rise and fall of John DeLorean from Belfast Telegraph reporter and avid researcher Andrew Madden.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
Andrew, you're very welcome to the Belfast Telegraph once again.
Thank you for having me.
John DeLorean, where did he come from?
Well, he was born in January 1925. His parents were Eastern European immigrants. He was born in Detroit, Michigan. I suppose his first connection really to the automotive industry would have been through his father, who was a union organizer at the nearby Ford Motor Company. Now, as a kid in school, he signed up for the electrical curriculum, and that's where he kind of excelled, and that would later lead him into engineering. He earned a scholarship at the Lawrence Institute of Technology. So then in World War II, he was drafted for military service, and he served 3 years in the US Army before he was discharged in 1946. So he eventually completed university, and he signed up to the Chrysler Institute of Engineering, and he also went to night classes at this time at the University of Michigan School of Business. So he clearly had a lot of ambition, anyway, in terms of his future career.
And it's a classic American story. He's the self-made man. He's the son of Eastern European immigrants. He worked hard.
He had
a natural talent. And it's the real American story, isn't it?
Very much so, because he came from nothing. You know, his parents were not wealthy whatsoever. His dad was an alcoholic. He didn't, a lot of his friends growing up in that area in Detroit would have ended up in prison or worse. And he really... to set his heart on making something of himself. So after serving his time at the Chrysler Institute of Engineering, he worked at Chrysler just for less than a year. It was kind of like a graduate scheme. And then he joined the Packard Motor Company in 1953. Now this is where he started getting the attention from his bosses for his work. And he later became the head of Packard's R&D department. And then if we fast forward to 1956, he joined General Motors. And I was there, he produced dozens of patented innovations, and he was promoted to chief engineer in 1961. So he was the brains behind the Pontiac GTO, any petrol heads would be familiar with that muscle car.
The great one is 400 cubic inches of glistening engine. The great one is a superb road handling chassis. The great one is bucket seats, carpeting, and a walnut-styled instrument panel. The great one is Pontiac GTO for 1967.
And that's what he was long associated for, because I was reading about him, doing a bit of research on the internet, and they said, well, whatever he did after it, you know, he's seen as this hero for a petrol head, because he conceptualized this idea of the muscle car, simply putting a big engine in a medium-sized car, and away you go.
Exactly. And he was known for being a fantastic engineer, but he had a vision of what he wanted to see on the road, and he was able to have that. He had that drive and the creativity and that charisma to be able to make that into a reality. And we'll get onto that later with his baby car, shall we say. So
he's with these big companies. He's working as an engineer. He's designing. He's innovating, and he's creating cars, which some of which are have stood the test of time and are very famous cars. But eventually, does he become frustrated with his work in those companies? Or
yeah, well, he became the youngest general manager in history of Pontiac at age 40. But this is when his personality started to kind of rile his bosses a bit. He started rubbing shoulders with celebrities, and he kind of refined his image. He lost a lot of weight. He had facial reconstructive surgery. He started lifting weights, and he started cultivating this image himself as a kind of a playboy, shall we say. So he left General Motors in 1973. Now, he left in a bit of a cloud of mystery. There's rumors that he was fired for giving a presentation about the future of the company, which was less than rosy in terms of the way he painted it, and it was leaked to the media. It was a confidential presentation, and then this obviously infuriated his bosses. But anyway, this is where he went on to Pastures New, and where we get the Northern Ireland connection comes from.
And he went on then to set up the DeLorean Motor Company, DMC. Mm-hmm. I mean, I presume, and I'm taking a bit of a guess here, when he set up the company, he didn't think, yeah, I want to go take this to Twinbrook.
No, not at all. No, he set it up in Detroit, but then, like any new company, you need money, you need seed funding. So he went around the world looking for somewhere that he could plant his foot and build his factory. And the only reason he came to Belfast, because you had to remember this was 1973, this was after one of the bloodiest years of the Troubles. It wasn't the place where investment went. People didn't think this was a fertile ground for starting a business in between the bombs and bullets. But the Northern Ireland Development Agency offered him around £100 million, which in today's money is a lot more, obviously. So with that, he packed his bags and off he went to Dunmurry.
John Zachary DeLorean is one of the biggest names in the car world. He was the youngest ever vice president of the giant General Motors company in Detroit before resigning several years ago in a series of personality and policy clashes. With his own personal fortune, he began a search for financial backing to fulfill his ambition of building his own cars in his own factory. His search ended here at Twinbrook Industrial Estate on the outskirts of Belfast.
And again, Belfast and Belfast made ships, not always successfully, let's be honest. We're going to cut that out there. So younger people may not know, but famous for making aircraft, and that's where the city airport comes from, because that's where the bombers that Shorts made took off from.
Oh, yeah.
And making other things, but not cars.
No, cars wouldn't be our speciality. I mean, Belfast was known, you know, historically for linen and then shipbuilding, but cars wasn't our forte, just wasn't one of the main sectors here.
But the company, wooed by money, ends up in Dunmurry. I mean, what motivation would the Northern Ireland Development Board, as was then, have, and politically have, for this company? What vision did they have?
Well, generally, I mean, at the time during the Troubles, the unemployment rate in Northern Ireland was staggering, and they hear of this charismatic American coming in and saying, I can hire 1,000 people from Northern Ireland to work in this. So these are skilled jobs, well paid. So if you have, you know, well paid jobs, it's good for the economy. It filters down, you know, it boosts the local economy. And as well, it's a good news story. At a time when they were few and far between in Northern Ireland.
And I suppose some people would have been of the opinion where if people have a good job in a car manufacturer, they mightn't be drawn into paramilitary activity.
Yeah.
That may be completely naive, or there may be a grain of truth in that. It's hard to say, but that's probably how they were thinking.
Of course, yeah. You know, if you're spending all your day in a factory building cars, you don't have a lot of time to go out and cause trouble.
So when does the first car come out of the factory in Dunmurry?
Well, see, there was problems from the very beginning, really, because a lot of the people that they hired, they have no experience in building cars before, so it was kind of a bit of a rush to get them trained up and to try to get the cars rolling off the assembly line. But it was 1973 when it was set up, but John DeLorean and the factory wasn't set up in Belfast until 1979, and the first cars rolled off the assembly line in 1981. So it was almost a decade, really, before...
What were they doing for a decade? I mean, now, forgive my ignorance, I've never manufactured a car, yeah. So I don't know.
Well, there was a lot of training, there was a lot of false starts. There was a lot of problems with the initial run in terms of the mechanics and whatnot. So, and it was kind of very much trial by error. So you know, it just essentially, they tried to do it as fast as they can. And with that, that caused problems in and of itself because they were in a rush, essentially. But regardless, it wasn't until, 1981, that the cars hit the market.
The DeLorean. Gullwing doors rise effortlessly, beckoning you inside. The sleek, stainless steel DeLorean. Beautifully crafted for long life, the DeLorean is one of the most awaited automobiles in automotive history. Drive the DeLorean. Live the dream today.
So the DeLorean rolls off, and you know, looking at it now, I mean, it still looks great. I think it still looks great. So people must have been blown away by this thing.
Blown away in both probably positive and negative. I mean, for some people, they might think it looks great. Other people might think it looks ridiculous. It depends on who you ask, really. And it did get mixed reviews when it came out. The price tag was a bit too expensive for people, given the amount of horsepower that you actually got, the amount of bang for your buck. There was various other problems with the car, were just in terms of its performance, really. So you were buying this vision that John DeLorean was selling you, this futuristic, you know, car of the future with the gullwing doors, the stainless steel exterior and whatnot.
I'm going to play you a clip from the BBC's Top Gear programme. And let's just have a listen to this.
The brakes come from a Ford Cortina, the glove box from a Volkswagen, the door locks Austin Allegro, gear knob Renault Fuego. You're not really robbing from royalty, are you?
From what it looks like on the outside, literally, he cannibalised parts of other cars. I mean, it seemed to be everywhere you could cut a corner and just use a, you know, it seems farcical. So that's what's just been said.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much kind of a Frankenstein car almost. Just in the design and going back to the fact that a lot of the workers that were assembling these cars hadn't worked before in that kind of field. And DeLorean was in a rush and he was trying to cut corners in terms of the costs because, you know, finances with these things are always tricky. So yeah, he had a mishmash of parts from different cars and he put them all into one, and then that's what caused some of the mechanical problems with the car and it impacted its performance. Yeah.
Now, there are some debates. I've been looking up online about how good or how bad was it, and some people say, well, if you replace the engine, it's great or whatever. I mean, I think it does. It still looks futuristic and very interesting, mm-hmm. from the outside at least. In the inside, if you look into a DeLorean, it's not that hot, but it's a lot hotter inside than what my grandfather's Ford Fiesta looked like from the same period.
Very much so. It's night and day. I mean, this was something people had never seen before. These didn't make cars that looked like that. It was completely different, and like it or loathe it, it was memorable, shall we say.
Now, leaving aside the status that it grew into, mm-hmm. let's just say, and how good or bad was it, because we're not going to test drive DeLorean today. And even if I did, I wouldn't be qualified, I have to admit, into giving a learned opinion as to the performance of a car. But mm-hmm. we can report that it was a commercial failure.
It was. I mean, of the around 7,000 cars in the initial run, only 50% were sold by February 1982. And at that time, it emerged that somehow John DeLorean had managed to get the company into $175 million in debt, and the Dunmurry factory was placed into receivership. So less than 2 years before the cars were off the assembly line, the business was near enough kaput.
The DMC sports car, the stainless steel brainchild of John Zachary DeLorean. But by Thursday afternoon, the DeLorean bubble had burst. Behind these gates at Dunmurry, the company was facing a financial collapse. It was just 18 months after production began, but it was feared that this could be the last consignment of cars from the company's plant. For the workforce, it seemed that their jobs were at risk, and for many, their jobs could be gone.
Do you feel that your jobs are threatened?
Very threatened indeed. But we'll just have to see how it works out today at this meeting. After that, who knows? The door again.
So, and we can see footage of people losing their jobs and that hope gone, etc. And a lot of questions as to what happened, the money invested in, etc., etc.
Yeah. Yeah, well, essentially, John DeLorean was asking the government for more money again and again and again. But what happened was, in 1981, there was also a change of government and Thatcher came in. And she wasn't too thrilled with the situation where you were given this American tens of millions of pounds worth of taxpayers' money and not getting the results in return. So she quickly put a stop to it. And then this left John DeLorean in a sticky situation where he had no money, his factory was in receivership, and he had nowhere to go, really.
We'll come back to John DeLorean, because we've seen his rise, and this is where it ended. But we cannot talk about John DeLorean, we cannot talk about the DeLorean without talking about probably the reason ultimately we're talking about it, because then along comes Dr. Emmett Brown, and the rest is history, or should I say, the future.
That's it. Doc Brown and Marty McFly, and the defining image from the Back to the Future movie is the DeLorean. Yeah, and actually, John DeLorean didn't even know they were going to use that car prior to the movie coming out.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
And for anybody who doesn't know, it's a 1985 film. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they do know because it's still shown quite regularly on TV today. It became a trilogy. That film starred Christopher Lloyd as Dr. Emmett Brown, Michael J. Fox, of course, as Marty McFly, but it also starred the DeLorean. And it you cannot imagine that they would have used any other vehicle whatsoever to produce the time machine.
No, when you look back at it now, it kind of looks like the car was made for that film almost, and it plays its own character in the film. You know, it's a central to the plot and whatnot, but yeah, it was just a perfect fit. I mean, whenever the producers of that film and the writers were probably coming up with the image, they probably couldn't believe their luck that they had it just sitting there in a factory in Dunmurry.
And obviously, Back to the Future was a roaring...
It was a roaring success.
It was a roaring success and a roaring commercial success. Mm-hmm. But the failure of the DeLorean car and the failure of the factory in Dunmurry led to the failure of John DeLorean's career, and more than that, his total fall from grace. I think his quote, one of his defining quotes is, "Would you buy a second-hand car for me?"
That is.
So what happened?
Well, when it went into receivership, another 2,000 cars were produced until John DeLorean was arrested dramatically and liquidation proceedings were launched and the British government seized the factory. Now, so what happened to John DeLorean? We talk about Hollywood films. He managed to get himself involved in a cocaine trafficking case with $116 million worth of cocaine, and he was videotaped in a hotel in America sitting down with quote unquote businessmen who turned out to be agents of the FBI and the Drug Enforcement Agency, and he was dramatically arrested on camera, and he was put in the back of a police car with strobe lights in his eyes, and that's the image that is the fall of John DeLorean.
Between this and the other, it'll generate the other gold. Gold weighs more than that. Or no?
You're in a rich, but a car slow violation.
he needed to get money from somewhere.
Well, that's it.
He went to investors and they offered him then more money if he would personally smuggle or facilitate the... And it was, I mean, it was the feds all along.
It was, yeah.
Now, we call that entrapment, of course.
And that's what his lawyers were able to argue, because it was known that John DeLorean would have done anything to keep his factory going, to keep the cars running off the assembly line, and he would look anywhere for it. Now, the government's case kind of fell apart because it turned out that one of their informants had actually approached John DeLorean and asked him to become involved in this cocaine scheme. And it was obviously the FBI and the DEA that set it up. So they were able to claim that this was entrapment. This would have never happened if the FBI and DEA didn't get involved. And he was subsequently acquitted. But as you say, the harm was done to his reputation, because there was one famous clip from the FBI sting in the hotel room where he holds up a bag of cocaine and he says, "This stuff's better than gold." So regardless of him being acquitted or not, as he said, he was famously quoted afterwards, as you mentioned, saying, "Would you buy a used car from me now?"
And like one of the things I suppose we have to point out, there's many cases, similar cases, the FBI would have done this in the hope that, you know, entrapment cases that can work in the US legal system, despite the fact that there's no indication that he would have done this anyway,
that
he was in the market. So, and that's why it was thrown out. But nevertheless, the evidence involved was all out there.
Yeah, it went through a whole very, very highly publicized trial, as you can imagine. And a lot of very damaging stuff came out during the trial. But ultimately, entrapment cases, they're a high-risk strategy. And this one failed for the authorities. But it wasn't exactly a successful outcome for John DeLorean either. Regardless, he was acquitted, but...
he was taken down.
He was taken down. The harm was done.
He was also connected to fraud charges.
Several fraud charges, yeah. In 1985, he was indicted on charges of defrauding his investors and tax evasion. But again, he was also acquitted from that, but no one wanted to do business with John DeLorean anymore after all this, as you can imagine. Actually, going back to his time in Dunmurry, during that it turned out that $23 million of funding he had been given was transferred to Panamanian bank account. Actually,
back with more. What I don't understand is why would the British government on purpose put egg on their face? Because it is egg on their face. They closed a plant that gave employment to people in Northern Ireland. Why would they fall prey to what the United States wanted, what you say the United States wanted?
No. I think that the British had made up their mind not to. See, they've been selling off all the government-owned businesses. They've sold off, they're selling off British Leyland, British Airways, British Petroleum, British Steel, and they had elected not to do any more industrial development. And that's the reason they would not honor the balance of our contracts. Because I think...
he was definitely... I mean, when we look at the footage of him, he was a colourful character.
He was. He was a guy that always had time for the press. He liked his own image. He was known for carrying around a little compact mirror to take his image out. And he was filled his house with mirrors and... a very, very carefully cultivated image, and he was known for rubbing shoulders with celebrities and living this kind of a rock star lifestyle. But by 1999, he declared personal bankruptcy after fighting about, I think it was 40 legal cases over the years. And in the years leading up to his death, he did have plans to try to resurrect the DMC, the car, but that never came to fruition. And I remember after his death, reading that Howard Weitzman, he was his longtime lawyer, he told the LA Times that after John DeLorean passed away, that John DeLorean had one of the most warped views of right and wrong of anyone he'd ever come across.
Having said all of that, 8,975 DeLoreans were made here in Belfast.
They were indeed, yeah.
So they did manage to make an awful lot of cars. You see them about, I mean, a lot of them are clearly still in existence.
Yeah. There's some people that have dedicated their lives to, you know, refurbishing these cars and keeping them ticking. And there's one sitting in museums places. Yeah.
So the legacy of the car, I mean, and we have discussed Back to the Future.
Yeah.
It's still an iconic thing, and it still has it's an incredible story behind it and an incredible personality behind it, and that's part of its cult attraction. And there are owner societies. We can see sometimes they come together. We can see them on the motorway, etc. So it is a story, I suppose, which just keeps going and probably will keep going as long as the cars keep going.
Well, that's it, yeah. I think, you know, with the movie, it's cemented its place in history, and because of that, people will always remember it. And even to this day, every now and again you hear stories of, oh, I hear they bring this car back. I hear they're bringing it back. And then with that comes the stories of John DeLorean. And
no harm to the car experts, but if these cars are still going well over 40 years later, well, how bad could they have been?
Well, that's it.
Andrew Madden, thank you very much once again for joining us here in the studio.
Thank you.
This episode of The Bell Tale was produced by myself, Kieran Dunbar. The sound design was by Graham Davidson. The clips you heard were from the film Back to the Future, of course, the BBC's Top Gear programme, UTV, RTE and BBC News.